building a company from nothing is freaking hard. Us entrepreneurs are expected to deal with unimaginable challenges and somehow keep a cool head through it all. This is The Art of Entrepreneurship, and I'm your host, Jackie Hermes. I grew my company, Excelity, from 0 to 7 figures with no partners and no funding. The Art of Entrepreneurship is a show where we cut through the BS and dig into what it actually takes to start and grow a company. If you give me your time, I promise it won't be wasted. Now let's get to work.
Hello, and welcome back to The Art of Entrepreneurship. In today's episode, we are continuing our conversation with Stephanie Rowland and Michael Ray, who you know well from last episode, who are our heads of strategy at Excelity. In part one of this episode, Michael and Stephanie discuss the importance of having a strong marketing foundation and what that foundation needs to include, which is things like buyer personas and what your core messaging should look like. Today, we're going to talk about building a marketing plan that covers the entire buyer's journey. That is from making someone aware of your company to getting them to that decision and beyond. So welcome back, Michael and Stephanie.
Okay, so that segment, I guess, is the foundational work that you want to have in place before you start creating your actual plan. When you start creating your actual marketing plan, I think that a lot of companies are like, okay, we need a marketing plan because we need demos. We want meetings, like those leads that we were just talking about. And most companies desperately need awareness. They have like 7 LinkedIn followers and no one knows who they are. And they're like, get me some demos. But that's not what they should be focusing on doing. We shouldn't be asking for the sale right away. If you just think about like putting ourselves in the position of the buyer, you think about all of the products that we see every single day. Like as a business buyer on LinkedIn, you see products marketed to you all the time. As a personal buyer, I mean, I don't even want to talk about how much time I spend on Instagram. It's probably a little bit too much. I actually put a 30-minute timer for myself, and I'm usually pretty good at shutting her down once the timer goes off. So good about that. But there's so many products that get marketed to you, right? And all of the things that you have to see as a buyer, like you have to become aware of the company, and then you have to see the product or service, right? And you have to understand the benefits, what it's going to do for you. Like, is it personally going to impact me in a way that I would want to spend money on it, or the business in a way that we would want to invest in it? Where's the proof, right? Like, you have to see those success stories, the case studies, the testimonials, if it's a consumer product. This is all, like everything we're talking about is campaigns that are created by marketers like us, and they are creating awareness before a purchase, and your marketing plans should do the same. So no big question or anything. Let's start there. In the simplest terms, how would you create a plan for developing a level of awareness for a company in terms of like a campaign? If you were going to launch one campaign that starts to create awareness for a company, where would you start?
This isn't universal, but usually we start with what are the pain points being experienced by the person that we want to reach?
Yeah.
We don't want to talk to them about like, hey, we're this company, we're awesome, and we have this cool stuff that's going on. We want to talk about like, here's something we know you're experiencing, and here's how we can help. And to me, like, that's a framework that should guide all of your marketing. It's not what can I get from you, it's how can I help you. That's customer service 101. How can I help you? And when you start doing that and you have that mentality through your awareness content, how can I help you? If they're trying to get educated to move through middle of funnel, how can I help you do that? When you get them through that process, and ultimately you're like, and can we have a conversation about how I could continue to help you? You've laid all of that groundwork out, and they're going to believe it because you've been helping them all the way.
Yeah. I mean, echoing what Michael said, I think every client that we work with is different. So there's no magic sauce or, you know, laid out plan. But I think that going back to one of those foundational pieces, your buyer personas, and taking a look at your your journey as well. What is their journey to purchase? And truly understanding, like Michael said, what are their pain points, but also what are their barriers? What would be stopping them during that stage of their journey from buying from you? Understanding those pieces, and then also taking your communications plan into consideration and understanding how your audience is interacting with those communications, and then mapping out the awareness campaign from there, I think is important. When I say looking at their the communications plan, it's because not everyone is going to have the same interaction with a form of advertising as another person. So truly understanding how that group of people that you're marketing to interacts with those particular pieces is going to also be important, and understanding what is the message that needs to go out on that particular form of communication, also very important.
Yeah. From a tactical perspective, I would add things like keeping your channels simple to start. So just choosing a few. I talk about this all the time. Don't bite off more than you can chew, and only identify a number of channels that you can keep up over time. Awareness, we often say, should be running year round all the time. I read a statistic that said only 5% or fewer of buyers are ready to purchase at any time. That means that you need to be in front of them all year round, so that whenever that 5% is ready to buy, you know, you're in front of them and you're top of mind.
Yes.
Testing and iterating, something that we have talked about all year round while you're running that awareness campaign. If we want to build on that, the next step would be consideration. I guess if we're doing a better job explaining some of this, the awareness stage is building awareness. That one's kind of self-explanatory. Consideration, I suppose, is kind of self-explanatory too. They are considering a solution. They know that they have a problem. They're considering making a move to solve that problem. Let's talk about the consideration phase and what goes into it. How would you go about building on top of that awareness campaign? Say we have it running, we're testing and iterating, it's working. We have more LinkedIn followers now, but people are gaining awareness of the company. What would you do to build on that? Like, what would your next campaign look like?
It's hard to think about this from just like a basic level.
Yeah.
You know, I am running through a bunch of campaigns that I'm actively creating right now.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to strip it back to the point where it's easy to explain. So like you just said, you know, keep that awareness campaign running, keep the simplest of channels, but we want to add on to that. So now that the people that you're talking to are aware of who you are, and they have that need or desire triggered, they understand that they need to find a solution. Now they're looking things up and perhaps even creating a short list from a list of vendors. So what we want to do is position why our solution is the best solution to solve for their problem. We want to back that up too. You can't just make claims and say, we have the best XYZ in the market. Well, why is it the best XYZ for that audience, and ensuring that you have that proof? So proof in the form of testimonials, case studies, video, if possible, really showcasing real life people who were able to benefit from utilizing your solution. Depending on the audience you're talking to, you might even want to dig into what the types of things that might speak to them. I know it might sound obvious, but a very logical, analytical person might appreciate a comparison sheet with straightforward statistics on the ROI that your solution provides them, as opposed to hearing a testimonial that's emotional and ushy-gushy.
Yeah. Where would you get information like that from?
Well, hopefully your business has done a very good job of asking your consumers for quotes on how you helped, asking your salespeople to do a really good job of taking notes on each one of their sales.
Yep.
Where did they start and how have they benefited now? So maybe this is even a tag team between your sales team and your customer service team or customer success teams to ensure that you're documenting all of these success stories and doing so with great care, because these are the types of things that are going to help you sell and get from shortlist to purchase, ideally.
Yep. And then in order to know like what kinds of like testimonials or what kind of materials you should be using, I guess that would go back to your personas, right? Like if you have a super technical buyer, they're going to want more like that technical documentation, or they're going to want more fact sheets or whatever it may be. And then if you have maybe a more emotional buyer or whoever it is, they might want more of that video. And that would all go back to that research, those stakeholder interviews and everything that you did. Are there specific strategies and tactics that you might employ during a consideration stage?
Tactics and strategies during consideration. I think if we're talking in an advertising capacity, probably my most common one is retargeting.
Yeah.
We're doing that awareness throughout the entire year to fill an audience that we can then retarget with all of this sub-messaging. In that stage, we know that they are likely weighing out different options. And so we've done with some clients where it's like, why I'm better than this guy. Not in that bold, maybe that bold. Like, because customers want to see that, because that's how, think of when you're trying to buy something, you're like, why is this brand better than this brand?
Yeah.
And you're looking for somebody to make a case. If you can show up in those searches, which could be organically or could be through like Google Ads, that's how people are searching for it. And they want to somebody to convince them. They want somebody to woo them a little bit with their content. And think of it in that framework too, that if like you're trying to present yourself as the most attractive version of your brand possible on every level. And so if you get way too in the weeds, somebody's like, I'm bored, I'm out of here. Mm-hmm. Your goal is to leave them wanting more, which is ultimately going to push them into decision stage marketing.
In B2B, don't be afraid to partner with sales too.
Correct.
Sales should be reaching out to these people. They should be calling them. They should be texting them. They should be staying top of mind on LinkedIn. I think a lot of times marketing and sales aren't communicating during this process, and they absolutely should be. They should be talking about the campaigns that are going out. They should be using similar messaging. They should have a communication loop in place where we're hearing feedback on how the messaging is landing. If we're talking to prospects and they're reading our marketing, it works so much better when we have that communication loop in place, yet often marketers don't. But it's definitely a best practice. The part that everyone wants to get to, asking for the demo, what do you do here? If you're building onto your awareness stage campaign, your consideration campaign, you might even have both of those still running to get people through your funnel. How are you converting them? Is it a specific campaign? Is it a set of tactics that you're running? What now?
Any and all of the above, maybe.
Okay.
I think this comes back to what we were talking about with personas, is when we go through like a persona workshop with a client, we talk about like, what are those challenges and barriers that prevent somebody from going over the line, like right over the line? So if we can get them there and we can't close them, what stops that from happening? And if we can understand that from a client, because they're hearing it from their salespeople, we create content to fill in those holes and be like, if this is what's preventing you, here's why that's not actually something that you need to worry about. Whatever that barrier happens to be, here's how we're overcoming it. And when you start getting into that piece of it, and somebody is that far down looking at that sort of content, getting them to be like, you know, why don't we just hop on a phone call for 15 minutes and all this stuff you're looking to talk about? And to me, a lot of our clients are shifting over to that, where it's like, a sales consultation call for 15 minutes. It's not a 1 hour demo, because I don't want to give you a 1 hour demo.
No.
Like I don't want to sit through anything for an hour unless, I would say nothing. There's nothing I want to sit through an hour for a demo to somebody to sell me to.
Me neither. I'm always like, do you need me on this call or can I watch it later?
Yeah, that's exactly. And that's why you do have things like on-demand demos where somebody's like, I want to watch in my own time, like with camera off. I don't want to talk to you. That's kind of the society we're in.
Mm-hmm.
And make that lift as low or as intense as possible. There are people who do want to sit through a two-hour demo. I'm not that guy, but there is that guy out there. Then there's people who want to sit and talk for 15 minutes. Then there's people who never want to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to provide a lane for each of them. And having that connection with sales, being like, what if you could close a deal and never have to talk to the guy except through email? Most salespeople would be like, awesome.
Sweet.
That's great.
Yeah.
I don't have to do that stuff. So let's try to create those different options available, whether they're somewhat, they want to talk to somebody, don't want to talk to somebody, or really, really, really want to talk to somebody.
I feel like a lot of companies are hesitant to create that don't want to talk to somebody. Putting a recorded demo out on the website, companies are like, oh no, people are going to see our demo. But yeah, you can do things like even block company URLs from, if you have a gate in front of it, mm-hmm, from submitting the form. So you could block all URLs like a Gmail, a Hotmail, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. Then you could block all of your competitor URLs. Like, you can take steps to try to lock it down if you are worried about something like that. But also, the truth is that your competitors probably have all of this information. The number of our clients that have screenshots of all of their competitors' software or recorded demo or whatever it may be, you know, all it takes is one prospect that's going through the process and they have gone through and looked at a bunch of different tools and says, oh, here's everything that I was looking at. It happens all the time. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I don't know. In my opinion, it's like, I guess I'm probably a little too loose with that. I should probably lock it down a little bit.
But yeah. But I mean, as a general rule, we're moving towards more transparency
in general.
And transparency is perceived as building trust.
Yeah.
It's, if I'm locking up all of my good stuff, why? What am I scared that's going to get out there into the world? And if I'm doing that and I'm a customer looking to buy, it's a hesitancy for me that if I'm like, why do I have to fill out this 12 like field form to get a case study that talks about why you're awesome? Why don't you just tell me that you're awesome?
And unless you're competing against like a Goliath, like unless you're competing against Apple or a huge company, by the time your competitor looks at everything that you have and then tries to rip you off, mm-hmm, you're going to be a year down your roadmap to the next cool thing. So, like, to me, it's not that big of a deal. No. But also, I mean, we publish and we talk about how we do everything. Yeah. We're sitting on this podcast talking about all of our strategies. We put a lot of our stuff out there. And we're also always iterating on it. By mm-hmm the time someone rips off all of our processes, we will be on like our 10th mm-hmm iteration of it, right? So I guess to me, it's not a huge deal. Are there any other specific strategies or tactics that you might employ during the decision phase?
I feel like I'm drawing a big fat blank right now.
There is more retargeting from what we're doing in consideration. Yeah. That is a big one going through. And I think having, which can show up in consideration and in decision, is scorecards with competitors, all of those little things. And one of the things we've also done with some clients, knowing that there are those different personas that can gum up the works, the tech guy who it's like, does it do this one thing? Oh, there's nothing that says it does that one thing. It's over.
Our blockers. Yeah.
So finding stuff that gets through the blockers, mm-hmm, and having that sort of content as well as all the other really, really convincing stuff.
Yeah. Stephanie, you, I know, have worked a lot on identifying our blockers and helping figure out how we talk to them lately with some of our brand work. How do you develop content to kind of get the blockers in the decision-making process on your team?
So I'm not necessarily developing content for the blockers because, and again, this is a very generalized statement that I'm making because every company is different, every buyer persona is different, and then every journey of these people is different.
Yeah.
But I think in general, what I've found to be the best process is to make content for the people who have the problems, who are interested in solving their problem. Make content for them that helps them either sell down to their blocker, which is always IT, at least in our case when we're working with a lot of B2B SaaS, or make content for them that will help them to sell up. I've found that with some, that's usually the best route to go, because if you get too high, C-suite, VP maybe, SVPs maybe, they're less likely to actually be the ones going out and trying to solve for the problems right. that the people under them are experiencing. So by making content for the people who are actually experiencing the problems or the managers of those people, because they're very concerned about team health, that's how you're really going to help yourself to overcome a blocker mm-hmm. or help to sell up to, C-suite people or.
Yeah, we got to make IT our best friends.
I know.
It's always been my strategy in mm-hmm. like any corporate role I've had. Like, you want to be my friend so you can help me with things, be it my computer incompetence or helping me implement the software that I need. Because really, I mean, I get why IT is a blocker because they have to do a lot of the legwork to implement all these pieces of software that we're selling. So I want to hear from each of you. Once all of this stuff is in place, so we have our awareness campaign, people are becoming aware of a company. They get to the consideration phase, they're comparing alternatives, they're ready to solve their problem. Then they get to decision, they're requesting demos, they're getting consultations, they're trying to make a decision on what kind of company or product service they want to go with. All of this stuff is in place. Where do you see companies kind of falling down the most or making mistakes the most in this process?
Definitely not continuing to nurture these people post-sale. Your customers can become your best salespeople if treated right, and also can become a great opportunity for upsell too when appropriate. So I think that the mistakes that are often made by either businesses or by marketing teams is that they think, okay, the person has bought the product and now we're going to wash our hands and we're going to step back and now we're going to start anew and try to fill that funnel again. Mm-hmm. And I think what a lot of people miss is continuing to nurture and continuing that transparency. Making sure that your customers are aware of new product launches, new features, aware of what's happening in the company. Now, whether or not they read it, it's up to them. You can lead the horse to water, but you can't make them drink, right? But at least you're doing what you can to help keep them abreast of what's happening and help keep them informed. So that would be, I think, my soapbox on that.
Yeah. Well, and it's much easier to keep a customer than it is to get a new customer. Mm-hmm. I know, I remember one of the earliest clients of Excelity. We did so much work helping them fill their pipeline, gain new sales. They had their biggest sales year ever. And then they lost like 40% of their customers out of the back end of their first year contracts. And it was like, there was some stuff definitely missed. And we went through a big revamping of their, you know, like their customer service, their everything within the company, their marketing program, because getting all of that back was really painful. So you're definitely speaking to me. Michael, what about you?
Yeah, I would add a few things in there. Like on that retention and upselling front is crucial. It also helps you developed whatever your product is, whether you're a SaaS platform or you own a hamburger stand, if you listen and ask your customers for their opinion, they're going to tell you little tweaks on how to change it and make it better because they're your audience. And if you're not letting them know, I've ended up in stakeholder interviews with somebody who's like, this is one of our best clients. They've been with us for 8 years and you get them on the phone and they're like, I wish they'd change this, 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 and this. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, their perception is this is a great client we could never lose. And the client's perspective is like, it'll do for now until something better comes along. That's a big problem.
Yeah.
And so having those lines of communication, and I mean on that front, like the marketing is important, like to continue to have that awareness of new things that are coming out, having that personal touch, and that I think a lot of companies do drop off is that customer service piece. I've worked in roles like that where it's like you're checking in on a regular basis. Is everything good? Is there something that's bad? What can we do better? What can we fix? And those customers feel heard. And that's more important than like, oh, we're supposed to launch this and it's going to be 90 days from now. Like you miss some of those things. If you have a relationship with them, they give you a lot more grace.
Yes.
And if you don't have that relationship with you, it's death by a thousand cuts.
Yeah. I think that's true in every scenario for sure. Gaining that relationship is, especially when you're making these big, like large dollar sales, very important. Okay, last question. Do you guys have a favorite client story where you put together a plan and you really loved how it went or it had a huge impact on the company? And if so, tell me about it.
So mine, I would say, is we created this plan for Clara Analytics in 2023 that was designed, all the things we're talking about, to move them from awareness, consideration to decision. And all of our campaign themes were aligned that way. We all know AI is a hot topic. It has been for a while. But in that particular space of insurance, there was a lot of questions there. So our entire first phase of that campaign is, what is AI? Making it not scary. And also back to that point of, we're helping you understand what it is, what it isn't. It's not Skynet. It's not going to take over your world. Then moving them into message in the second piece of like how it can help you and actually benefit you. And then the last leg of that was, and why we're great at it and how we can do it. And so that entire campaign after launch was designed that it could run on a flywheel anytime of somebody coming into awareness, getting through all of that different messaging all the way through. And they ended up with, I don't have exact dollar amounts, but their marketing did awesome that year. They closed a lot. They hit and exceeded every single goal they had. And while that is a credit to that entire team as well as what we were doing, it definitely was a great layer that we've been able to build on, you know, all of last year and going into 2025 as well.
Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think this page continues to rank number 7, right, of 250 plus pages on their website, which is wild. They have a lot of content and it's a very, very high traffic page. So there are just tons of people landing on it and it's a very high value page still a year plus later.
One piece I missed of that is that we then took all of that content, awareness, consideration, decision, and put it into a pillar page that walked visitors through all the way.
Yep.
And that's why it continues to rank high, even though we're not putting money to promote it or directly promoting it. It just has gotten all of that SEO because it's everything rolled together.
Pillar pages make the Google happy.
I don't have a specific anything to share right now. I think the past couple years I have been entrenched in a lot of project work as opposed to work like Michael has been doing. So I don't have any specifics, I can say that some of my favorite work is actually the start of the work. It's before we actually produce something. I am a glutton for knowledge. I just can't stop. So just the entire process of I'm sure many agencies call this, but onboarding a client, that's my favorite part of the work. Yeah. It's being able to conduct that research and gleaning insights from anywhere I possibly can in order to develop that strategy. So it's the what we do leading up to the strategy that's my favorite. But I don't have any specific examples right now that I could share. But my mind is just...
Monday.
Yeah, it's Monday. But a lot of my work lately has been very project focused. So I'm having a hard time looking back 2 years to remember.
That's okay. We're going to get into that in a bit. All right. Thank you both for being here. I really appreciate it. And for everyone listening, if you got value, you learned something new today, which I guarantee you did, please share this episode with just one person. Help me grow this podcast and our audience for The Art of Entrepreneurship. And I will talk to you next time. Thank you.